Today is March 14th, 2018, and this is episode number 453 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, an overgrown boy. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast,
excuse me, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment or question anything about the show, head over to facebook.com/groups/context machine and join in the conversation. We'd love for you to do that.
Yeah, and you can tell little Bri what you think.
Ridiculousness.
Yeah, well, you know, a story of our lives. Yeah.
So do we start off with the overgrown boy topic, or do we actually...
We might as well, because you've given us such a great setup for it.
Well, I'm not actually sure why you proposed this as a topic.
The reason I proposed this was because when we have our morning meetings, and for those of you that don't get to participate, which is almost everyone...
It actually is almost everybody.
Yeah. We do our morning meetings... with video, so we can see each other. And Brian, when you start off on a topic like this, it is just straight up entertainment.
No.
Yeah.
No, sir.
Yes, sir.
No, sir.
Totally is. All right. So should I tell everyone what has you all excited?
Yes. Sure. Why not?
Spinners.
Spinners.
And specifically, this spinner that has more science put into it than some space launches.
Well, I don't know about that.
No, I've seen space launches from like 12-year-old kids where they send a GoPro up into space and then...
All right. Fair enough. A lot more science than that. Yeah. Although there is a lot of science that went into that the kids didn't do.
Right. But the actual production and execution of their space flight, oftentimes includes a balloon, several Lego bricks, some glue, and a camera.
Right. So we're talking about fidget spinners in particular, not just spinners per se, but fidget spinners.
Yeah, so we're not talking about cars from Blade Runner.
Right. And there's this... Mitsubishi, actually a couple of Mitsubishi subsidiaries. Now, this would be the Japanese conglomerate that made fighter planes in World War II and makes cars today, as well as boats, huge ships, I believe. I believe they make, they're like one of the biggest shipping companies, like big, massive tankers.
They make giant cargo tanker ships.
Yeah.
Just like Samsung does.
They do like a whole bunch of things. And two of their subsidiaries got together and they had 50 people, many of which were engineers and scientists. And they made a fidget spinner. They made 100 fidget spinners.
Because what better way to use a company's vast resources than to make a fidget spinner?
Exactly. Now, to be fair, they wanted to set a Guinness Book of World Records, which they did.
Okay.
For spinning a spidget finner on one hand.
A spidget finner?
A spidget finner. I don't know. Yeah. A fidget spinner. on one hand, they set the record 24 minutes and I don't know, 46 seconds, something like that, which is a long time to be holding a device on a finger.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, and because they just balanced it on their fingertip.
Yeah, yeah. And if you have any doubt about that, take, you know, anything fidget spinner sized and hold it on the end of your finger and see how long you want to do that.
Well, I was surprised they didn't make like a little fidget spinner stand.
Well, I did a cool stuff found on this, because so Mitsubishi put out a video for it, and it's just. Okay, here's why I like fidget spinners. I like high-end fidget spinners. And the reason why I like them is because they are these beautifully machined contraptions.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a thing, and the thing is pleasing to do, but it's the beautiful machining that I love so much about these things. And but anyway, I noted in my piece that if they had held it in two fingers, it would have been easier and they would have gotten a longer spin. But they were specifically going after the world record for a one-handed spin.
Well,
that's why they held it in that particular way instead of just putting it on a table.
But okay, so if they're doing a one-handed thing, that doesn't preclude you from using, say, a finger and a thumb to hold it still, right?
Let me see if this made sense to me when I went back and was rereading. Let's see here. Sausage.
Yeah, but it's really, really nice sausage.
On one hand, longest duration spinning a fidget spinner on one hand is the actual Guinness record.
So that precludes using a second finger from the same hand?
Yeah, apparently. Because that spinner probably would have gotten 30, 35 minutes, I'm guessing, with two fingers held upright, held vertical instead of horizontal.
Interesting. And they did it several times.
Well, they had multiple suits. Like, these are all, like, of course, I mean, you know, it's a Japanese company. It doesn't actually mean that they were all executives, but I'm guessing they were all engineers and executives. Mm-hmm. who each did their, you know, did a spin with Guinness people on hand with multiple timers mm-hmm. involved. And you see all these people, you see all these adults huddled around another adult with the fidget spinner in their hand and timing them.
Okay, so this fidget spinner that all of these men children were
there was a woman child too,
and a woman child were doting over. How did they manage to get something that would spin for over 20 minutes?
Well, so, and 20 minutes is a long time. So, like, you look at the like a plastic spinner, the kind of spinner that an actual child is likely to have.
The kind that I got at CES this year. By the way, right. I now have a fidget spinner.
Oh, congratulations.
I haven't spun it yet, but I have it.
Fair enough. So those spin for like a minute or two.
Okay.
You can get metal ones that might spin for 4 or 5 minutes, 6 minutes. I've got, I think my best time ever was 10 minutes. I didn't write it down.
How many fidget spinners do you own?
Shut up. You're not the boss of me.
All right. So we'll assume but that
my,
means at least
I will
five.
Tell you that I will tell you that my most recent one is made of tungsten.
Oh, that's the one you showed me.
That's the one, yeah, I showed you this morning.
The stubby one.
It's very stubby, very, very heavy. Tungsten is very dense.
So extremely you have at dense. Least five spinners.
Maybe. And so I've gotten, you know, like my best ones have done like 10 minutes. I've got one that routinely do 8 minutes. And I'm like super stoked about that. And, you know, the rest of them are like all in that, you know, 5 to 6 minute range. 5 to 7 minute range. And so 24 minutes is an extremely long time. And they only had one that did it. We saw times of like 19 minutes, 20 minutes, 22 minutes, several times in those frames that this video showed us. And then the one that actually won the record was 24 minutes and 46 or 36 seconds, something like that.
That's crazy.
46.34 seconds.
Wow.
And so they did it by, one thing, it's a two metal, probably brass and either steel or brass and aluminum. It's probably steel.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know. Don't know though. And it looks like a wheel, like a tire with a wheel in it or something like that. With, you know, so the brass, it's completely in, the outer edge is completely enclosed.
Okay.
And they used, what'd they do? They froze. They probably used, like hydrogen, liquid hydrogen to cool it.
Yeah. Depending on the metal, maybe liquid nitrogen.
Oh yeah. Right. So one of the two, and, they, you know, froze the inner bit so that it would fit inside the brass bit. And then as it warmed, it would just naturally expand and form a seal without any kind of weld or screws or glue,
which is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's super cool and super expensive to do. And everything is just incredibly finely machined and measured to, you know, measured to the, you know, nth degree. And they also got some very, very expensive bearings from that's what one of the subsidiaries contributed to this was a specially made bearings, I think. And there you have it. That's the recipe.
So what you need are special metals, maybe alloys, a way to do super high precision machining, and then you also need a way to
very cool. Very 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 but you also need a very fine measurement tools to make sure that everything is perfectly balanced.
Sure. And then you need really really cold so that you can shrink the metal from one piece, set it inside the other.
Yeah.
And then I imagine that that you have to do some crazy thing with the way you hold the pieces while the inner piece warms so that it sits in the right place.
You would think so. Yeah. They didn't show that taking place. They showed it, you know, the steaming, that's probably not steam, but the, I don't know what the word is. Do you know what the word is?
The gas.
Well, yeah, but what, it was off. Well, anyway, whatever it smoking. It looked like it was smoking, but it was from being cold. They showed that, that setting part. In that. Yeah.
Yeah.
They showed it setting in.
That's just moisture condensation because it's so cold.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. They just, anyway, so they just showed them setting it in there and we didn't actually see how they actually made sure that it went exactly where it's supposed to go. So, very cool stuff. They made 100 of these things and they sold them through, a spinner retailer in Japan for $450.
So you could get one of these, super, high tech machined fidget spinners for just under $500.
Yep. $450, but they were only being sold in Japan and they're gone, long gone. They were snapped up.
But I bet people can still find them.
Yeah, I found two of them on eBay. And, you know, one risk, of course, is that you would be buying a fake.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a Japanese retailer, selling two of them on eBay. One is listed, as we speak, for $999, starting bid.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is listed at $9,000 or best offer.
Which brings us to the real point of the topic. Let's talk about Brian's GoFundMe so he can buy a high-tech fidget spinner.
I so want this thing, man. I so want to try to get one. Not gonna. I don't have the money to, but I so want to.
So if you go to briansfidgetspinnerfund.com, it'll have a link to the GoFundMe page where you can contribute to Brian's fidgets. I just made up the URL, everyone.
Yeah. Please don't go there. And please don't go register anything in my name. Anyone listening right now.
Do it.
No. Are you kidding? That'd be terrible.
No, that would be terrible.
So,
kind of funny
stuff, man. Fun stuff. I like this. there's a particular store, an online store, Spinetics. SpineticSpinner.com, I think is what it is, but I can include a link in the show notes if people are interested in high-end fidget spinners that don't cost $450, but they do cost anywhere in between like $20 and $200.
So I feel it's appropriate that I offer up a blanket apology to all of our listeners, because every time you talk about one of your cool obsession things, it ends up costing people money, because people get into it. I mean, like when we talked about the hobo nickels,
mm-hmm.
There are people that told me that
hobo coins. No, hobo nickels. You're right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. See, hobo nickels. Yeah. There are people that told me that this was going to get expensive for them. When you've talked about doing wax seals,
mm-hmm. Several people uh-huh. have gotten into wax seals because of me.
Uh-huh.
And so I have two responses. The first is, I'm sorry. The second is, you're welcome.
And of course, now people are going to start looking at high-end fidget spinners, and it's all on you.
I'm playing with one now.
I'm sure you are. What's it made out of?
Tungsten. It's the tungsten one.
Oh, okay.
It's the one I have, Andy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So sorry, everyone, for the money you're about to spend on high-end fidget spinners that you didn't realize you needed until right now.
Indeed. I think the tungsten one is on their homepage.
So, yeah. So there will be a link in the show notes.
It is extremely satisfying, except for that it doesn't spin all that long, but it's extremely satisfying to play with.
So I'm betting that you've already researched into what sort of bearings you can put in there to replace the ones that it shipped with and improve its spin time.
Yes. I have bought I might have a stash of high quality bearings.
That's kind of funny and not surprising.
I also have a bearing cleaner, which is, modeled after a truck cleaner for skateboards. So it's a bottle with a screw in it, and you put your bearings on the screw, and then you can just shake it to clean it.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's kind of cool.
The skateboard community developed that a long time ago.
And now the fidget spinner community has repurposed it.
Yep.
Of course. Yeah.
And I'm an overgrown boy.
Yeah.
Right. Do we have any other topics, or is this the show?
I think that was it. Actually, yeah. Do you want to talk about the list I'm putting together?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, tell me about this. I'm really not sure what you asked me. I don't really know what you're doing with it.
Okay, well, I was intentionally vague because I didn't want people overthinking this. So here's the background on this. And Brian, I know this is new to you because I seriously did not tell anyone at TMO what I was doing with this. So I noticed a couple of days ago on Twitter, people were talking about what they thought the best product Apple had released in just recently would be. And so I thought, well, that's really interesting. I wonder what everyone at TMO would say. So I decided to ask the TMO staff to tell me what they think the top few products are that Apple has released in just the past few years. And that's exactly as vague as I left it. So I said, give me somewhere between 3 and 5 products. And so some of those are still coming in, but I have a pattern here. So Brian, I'll list off the products that you gave me.
Okay.
It's AirPods.
Yep.
The iPhone X.
Mm-hmm.
iPad Pro 10.5-inch.
Chick-a-rooney.
And AR kit.
Yep.
And I'm letting that one slide because that's not actually hardware, but it does something for the hardware.
Did you specify hardware?
Yeah.
You specified hardware?
I did.
Huh. All right. Well, then take that off the list.
No, it's okay. It's, I mean, when I compile the numbers for how many products actually get named, I won't include that, but that's okay. It's fine.
I almost included iMac Pro, except for the fact that it's flawed.
So, all right. Well, iMac Pro is at the top of John Martellaro's list. So let's talk about that for a minute. Okay. So you said you didn't include it because it's flawed. Why do you say that?
The Pro machine that you can't upgrade your RAM and your hard drive without cracking it open.
Well, and some of the things you can't even upgrade, even if you were to crack it open.
You can do the hard drive. Oh, it's not a hard drive. You can do the SSD. And the RAM, you can do both those.
I mean, that's right. You can do both of those.
Yeah, but you can't do it without cracking it open, and that's not a Pro machine.
And you can't change out the video card.
You can't change the video card. I'm okay. I'm actually okay with that.
Interesting.
From the standpoint that it's an iMac Pro. It would not be acceptable with a Mac Pro. It was not acceptable for the trash can Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm okay with that for the iMac Pro, believe it or not.
That's interesting. All right. Okay. So to carry on with John's list, iMac Pro, iPhone 10. So that's one thing that the two of you have in common. Mm-hmm. Apple Watch, iPad Pro, and John doesn't specify. He includes the 10.5-inch and the 12.9-inch. So for the sake of making it easy for me to keep track of everything, we'll go with the 10.5-inch iPad Pro so it matches up with what you have.
Yep.
And then he adds in the 12-inch all USB-C MacBook. And I thought that was a fascinating thing for him to include because that computer feels like it's artificially limited.
It's an e-book.
Yeah. But what I do like about it is that it has that really thin form factor, and it feels like it was the beginning of Apple moving down this new path with the way we're going to connect devices to our computers. And it's, you know, yeah. It was like the beginning.
But that was flawed too. Only one port is a mistake.
I agree completely. I think
that's, it's just,
yeah,
it's just dumb.
Yep. All right. So, I have four things on my list because I really couldn't decide on a fifth thing, which told me that there wasn't one for me. So I have AirPods. So you and I have that in common. Apple Pencil.
God, I wish I'd said Apple Pencil.
And I was surprised that neither of you said Apple. Well, no, I'm surprised you didn't say Apple Pencil.
I didn't think of Apple Pencil. If I had thought about it, I would have included it.
So, well, there you go. It made the list because I did think of it. Apple Watch Series 3. Okay. And I chose Series 3 specifically because this is the one where the sensors that we thought we were going to have in earlier models, and to some degree did, they can actually be used. We also have the new heart rate, heart detection stuff that's allowing some of these new heart monitoring scientific studies, medical studies to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one that also adds in cellular connectivity for data.
Yeah.
And so to me, this felt like we took the Apple Watch from a state where it was a useful device for many people, and it became something that was much more encompassing and far more useful, and is at a point where I feel like this is a product that people are really going to be interested in moving forward. So this was the breakthrough model since the original was released. And then the 10.5-inch iPad Pro. So the iPad Pro ended up on all three of our lists.
Hmm.
And the reason that one ended up on my list, and I fully acknowledge that I was questioning the size before it was released, because the 9.7 inch screen, I love that size. I mean, I really love
that size. You were complaining. It's the same form factor. You were complaining about that?
I was,
fee on thee, man. Fee on thee.
There you go. But when I saw it and saw how it felt, when I felt it, when I realized how well it balanced in my hand, my concerns were gone, because I think the 10.5 inch iPad Pro is the perfect size iPad. And the screen on it is fantastic. It has serious horsepower, and it's just the single best iPad on the market right now. That said, you're not going to pry my 12.9 inch iPad Pro out of my hands. I love that thing.
Fair enough.
So those are the devices that we have on the list right now. And, the fact that we both have AirPods, not a surprise to me, because we both have AirPods.
Yep. I love my AirPods.
Yeah. And I bought mine as an experiment, because I felt like I needed to really seriously try them, since I'd had such bad luck with every other in-ear product Apple has made. And I was genuinely surprised that they fit in my ears and don't hurt. First time I've ever been able to put an Apple EarPod type product in my head without experiencing ridiculous pain.
Huh. All
right. Yeah. And I like how they sound. I know it's not the same thing as having a high-end headphone with a wired connection, but for their size, I think they sound great. And this is the best hands-free driving option I've ever had for a phone.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, I like them. I like them a whole lot. I like them for phone calls. I wish they had a longer talk time.
Yeah, well, considering how small that battery is, because the battery fits in the shaft on an AirPod, I'm surprised there's power at all. Because that shaft also has to include the wires and a microphone. So there's quite a little bit.
And two turntables.
Yeah, and two turntables. Yep. So there's a lot packed in that little shaft.
Yeah, it's true. But I still wish they had longer talk time.
Sure. That'd be nice.
I do sometimes have long phone conversations, and we'll have to start juggling after, you know, about 2.5 hours.
And by juggling
them.
Yeah, by juggling, you mean you talk with just one in your ear. When you realize you're getting low on power, you take the other one out, put it in your other ear, and then take the one that's dying out and put it back in the charger case.
Yeah, I do a little bit different. I like having them both in my ears. I like having the person's voice in both my ears. Mm-hmm. And so I'll listen to them as long as I can, and then take out one. You were starting the way you just said it. You were starting with one.
Yeah,
I'm starting with two. I'll take one out, charge it a little bit, stick it back in my ear, put the other one, let it charge. And then, you know, juggle for a little bit until I can get them both back up to, you know, say another hour of talk time.
You know, if you were okay with having just one in your ear, you can go a lot longer between juggle maneuvers.
Yeah, it's true. I'm not. And also, you're still not the boss of me.
I'm still not the boss of you. All right, so I learned something about the AirPods the other day that will come in handy for a subset of our listeners.
Okay.
So let's say that you are someone that has hearing in only one ear, but you have AirPods. So you're only using one of them because you can't hear in the other ear. But you still come up with the same problem, which is after a set amount of time, well, that battery's just kind of conked out, but you still want to do phone calls. Mm-hmm. You can actually put the opposite AirPod in your ear and it'll work. You know, as long as it doesn't like physically hurt, you can put an AirPod in backwards. And I've watched this happen and it was, I mean, it looks weird to me, but it totally works.
Why would you do this? What is this accomplishing?
Well, it would be one of two scenarios. The first scenario is you're on a long conversation, hands-free. Mm-hmm. The AirPod you normally use, the battery's about dead. So you take the other AirPod and you put it in your good ear.
Why wouldn't you just put it in your other ear?
Because your ear's not a good ear.
Oh, someone with a hearing problem.
Yes. Yes.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing would be, what if you actually lose the one ear pod that you normally use and you don't want to spend $79 to get a replacement? Then you take the other ear pod and you put it in your backwards. So apparently for a lot of people, it fits.
I see.
Yeah. So anyhow, the idea for me with this whole list thing was I'm curious to see what it is that each of us thinks is are the standout products from Apple's recent history. And if everyone else is along the same lines, it looks like we think the 10.5-inch iPad Pro is the bomb.
Well, yeah, except for the iPhone 10 is actually the bomb. So if everyone who doesn't put that on their list is just wrong.
Like me?
Yeah, you're wrong. Why didn't you include the iPhone 10?
I really like it, but when I thought about the other four products, it was like, oh, these are on the list. Boom, 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 done. And then I got to what I would put for a fifth thing, and I'm like, well, the iPhone 10. But I didn't have that enthusiasm. It was more. It felt more like I was putting it on because it was a good product, and I just wanted to have a fifth spot on my list.
How does it feel to be wrong? Because I'm not familiar with this sensation, so I thought seriously? Maybe you could describe it to me.
Oh no! Well, if it ever happens to me, I'll let you know.
It's happening to you now.
I'm really surprised that you're not familiar iPhone 10 with this sensation.
iPhone 10 is the bomb diggity.
The iPhone 10 is great. I think
that's what the kids say.
The iPhone 10 is great. What I love about it is that the whole facial 3D mapping thing is the beginning of, I think, a totally new way of interacting with our devices. The screen is beautiful, and the cameras are awesome. And yet, at the same time, I was like, well, it didn't jump out at me in the same way that these other four products did. So I just didn't put it on my list. Yeah. But I want to point out that I did not include software on my hardware list.
This is true. This is a very, very excellent point.
Yeah.
I would actually want to remove the software that I mistakenly included and sub out Apple Pencil.
So
that would be my brother.
Okay. Well, you know, we can do that because it turns out I'm totally making up all the rules for this list thing myself. Mm. So, yes. So hold on. I will fix that for you right now. Hold on. So AirKit is gone. Apple Pencil. Oh my gosh. Look at that, Brian. We have AirPods, Apple Pencil, and 10.5-inch iPad Pro, the same thing on our list.
All right, sweet. And some sausage.
And some sausage. By the way, I really like my keyboard.
That's good.
Yeah. You know, let's make this interactive. Listeners, what do you think are the best two or three products that Apple has released in recent history? I'm curious what you guys think. So you can let us know. What would that be? Facebook.com/groups/contextmachine?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it would be.
So let us know there, or comments in the show notes. That's a good place too, because we'll look there. And if you're really into email, acm@macobserver.com.
Totally.
Yeah.
Email's awesome.
Emails are awesome.
Wait, hold on. Not awesome. What's the other one?
Beautiful.
Pain in my butt. That's it. That's it. No, pain in my butt.
I mix those up sometimes. I mean, you understand.
I do. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So how about this Jamf?
Yeah. Did you know they're a sponsor today?
I had an inkling.
Yeah.
Fantastic that we have a sponsor. And I would really like it if you would tell me about them.
Oh, sure. I can do that.
You've been using them, right, for years.
Yeah. I've been a Jamf user for several years. So what they do is they make this online service that you can use to keep track of your iOS and macOS devices. So you could think of it sort of like having your own personal IT device management service without having to actually go to college and get a degree to be able to efficiently manage the different devices that you need to keep track of. So for me, I use it to keep track of my iPads, my iPhone, my two laptops, because I also have my MacBook Air to go along with my MacBook Pro. And then I added in my parents' devices. So their iPhones, my mom's iPad, my dad's iMac, and what this lets me do is keep track of what operating system version is running on every single device, keep track of all of the important settings for each device, you know, so like email settings, things like that. And then if my parents haven't done their software updates, when I've told them to, I'll know. And then I can call them up and gently remind them to do it. Or the next time I see them, I can just take their phone and say, okay, we're doing this now. But it also gives me the ability to push settings out. So if something gets messed up with settings like email settings, I can just push the correct settings back out. And this is something I've had to do for my dad before, because he decides to go in and I'm doing air quotes, fix his settings. And then he calls me and he's like, why is my email not working? It's got this.
Right, we all know someone like that, right? We all help someone like that.
Yes. And so Jamf, they can make this so much easier for you. So here's how this works. If you have three devices, that's free. Like, seriously, there's no strings attached. It's just the entire system, all the features, up to three devices. It is free. And there's
no, I mean, you're not talking about a free trial.
No, not a trial at all. It's just up to three devices.
That's incredible, man.
Forever.
Seriously, that's just, it's incredible.
Oh, it's awesome. Absolutely awesome. And then if you have more devices than that, it's just a couple dollars a month per device. And so, you know, that way, if you have, you know, like five devices, you're paying less than a Starbucks drink a month to be able to manage all of these devices through an easy to use web interface. So it's totally worth checking out, and you can go set up your free account and get started at their website. It's jamf.com, jamf.com/ACM. And you want to use that special link so that they know that you found out about Jamf here on the show. And then they give us a little love and everyone's happy. Jamf.com/ACM.
That's fantastic, man. Thanks for Jamf for sponsoring us. It is such a good service. They're really doing something special there.
They are. And imagine if you have a small or a mid-sized business where you have like a fleet of iPads or iPhones that your sales staff is using in the field. You can totally manage these devices the way you want and not have to like sprain your brain trying to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah. And the same thing with your parents, you know, if you're taking care of your parents' devices or your kids' devices, same thing.
Yeah. It's absolutely awesome.
It's terrific. So thanks to them for sponsoring us. Thanks to Jeff for explaining it. And what's that URL one more time?
jamf.com/ACM. jamf.com/ACM.
Excellent.
And thank you, Jamf, for being our sponsor.
Indeed.
So we still have another topic.
What is it?
WWDC.
Oh yeah. They've got the thing. They've got the website thing.
Yeah. So you can go sign up to be in the lottery to get your WWDC pass. Assuming you are already a registered Apple developer program member.
Or register first.
Yeah. They always have a cutoff date where you have to be registered before a certain date. Mm. I don't remember what it is this year, but yeah, you probably still have time to register so that you can get in on the lottery to see if you can get a ticket.
And just, you know, to get this out of the way, predictions, new iOS, new macOS, maybe some new iPads, maybe a new Mac. So, you know, duh.
Yeah, that's the new operating systems, of course, because that's what Apple shows off every year at WWDC. New hardware, it's been kind of hit and miss whether or not they do hardware at the events, but they did last year, and there's talk that we're going to get a new iPad Pro and a new MacBook this year.
Right. So, yeah. That out of the way, the hot topic for WWDC has got to be the website.
Yeah, I like how the website looks, and I'm just amazed at how people are freaking out and flipping out over the design of the website.
And design's a good word.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at this thing, it's basically, it's got a bunch of skeuomorphic representations of different interface components.
Yeah, some of it's kind of skeuomorphic. It's all definitely
physical. It's all physical looking. Yeah. I shouldn't have said skeuomorphic. It's all physical looking. Like 3D look, it's, you know, it looks like they look like physical objects, including like buttons and rendered glass. We've got squares that you would turn. I don't know what the heck that's supposed to be. You got the volume buttons that are in rendered blocks of glass. You've got different buttons you can push. I'm looking at it live. There's the volume slider. It looks like a physical slider that you actually, you know, slide mm-hmm. back and forth. And I think that it's a very reasonable interpretation that this is a preview of where we're going to be going. Maybe not the color. It's all white.
I can't. Oh, I totally have to borrow a line from you.
Yeah.
Balderdash.
Why?
Apple has historically not used its graphic for WWDC to telegraph to us what they're doing.
Apple telegraphs stuff all the time, and it's media like invitations WWDC too.
No, it doesn't. People retroactively think they do, and they reinterpret cloudy pastel colors to indicate this is what Apple did.
No, last year we had the people. The connections thing, the people. Yeah.
Yeah, that had nothing to do with Apple's product roadmap.
Yeah, I think it was like business chat.
About people interacting with each other.
And Apple Pay.
That is retroactively applying meaning to that image.
I think that is a very reasonable, even if it's a reinterpretation.
Balder fracking dash.
Okay. I disagree with you there, and that's fine. By the way, you can take notes later for reminding yourself about how it feels to be wrong.
Okay. Let's look at these elements closely.
Mm-hmm.
So in the bottom left corner, you have three gumdrop glass buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now look straight up above that, right above where the Apple and WWDC is. And mm-hmm. you have sort of like a lozenge shape with little arrow buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Now look off straight across to the right edge of the image. And you have the flat square buttons with a plus and minus on them.
Mm-hmm.
These are all different versions of Apple interface elements over time. I don't think Apple's bringing back gumdrop lozenge glassy buttons. That we're getting to see elements.
We've never had. The only thing I can think of that the glass balls represent would be the
Mac OS.
Yeah, but that was in the window buttons, not multiplication buttons.
So,
well, you're.
No, wait. No, plus minus. If you look at the buttons, it's an X, it's a dash, and it's arrows. Those are the glassy window buttons for close and minimize and maximize. They are old interface elements. I look at this and I see a history of Apple elements from macOS and iOS.
All right. So even if that is specifically the case, in other words, that this is not any kind of indication of future things, but is actually a retrospective look through the past, even if that's the case, we're certainly, this is certainly saying that there's change coming in this particular area. And I would say that it is a very reasonable bet that AR is going to be a big part of it, and having physical manifestations of things relating to AR also makes a lot of sense.
Okay. What you just said about the AR stuff, I am so completely on board. I think that
I accept your apology.
And also I want to point out for the whole world, at no point have I apologized to Brian for this, but because he's wrong, he thinks that I have, and that's okay because I love you. So
I'm channeling Colbert there.
I know. And I was trying to play it up for dramatic effect. Did it work? Yeah.
Yeah. I just.
So, okay. The AR thing. I am so on board with Apple doing a lot with our interfaces over time for AR, because they have very, very openly telegraphed. They didn't even telegraph. They've held up signs for us, essentially saying we are very invested in AR and VR. And so they're going to be doing more and more with each progressive version of their operating systems to incorporate more and more AR technology. So, yep, I am so on board with you for the AR part. But I'm not really looking at this as Apple giving us clues. Not the way people seem to think that Apple does. Because that's not Apple's MO. People retroactively apply
what
they learn to the invitations.
That there's always something to Apple's imaging. I think it always has some kind of meaning. Now, it may be opaque to us, but I think that meaning is always there. And in that this is WWDC, and in that these are interface elements that are all being represented on this page, and in that they look very different from anything that Apple's done, that indicates something. It indicates something to do with the UI. And I would be shocked if it didn't end up being some kind of hint.
Yeah, I'm still having a hard time accepting this as a hint. To me, it just feels like an expression of what Apple is doing. And when I look at the pieces,
but they're not doing any of these things,
When I look at all of these elements, what I'm seeing are the components that developers use when they create applications for us. And it's not so much about everything is going 3D and Apple is ditching the flat interface and we're going back to skeuomorphism as well. I just see a a really cool stylized representation of the elements that developers use when they're creating applications with Apple's own tools.
Hmm. That seems a very myopic view.
And at least my myopic view isn't rooted in a fantasy world.
Fine, fair, I suppose. All right, so let's shift slightly over. We saw a couple of threads on the Twitters.
Yes, we did.
And from people who were like in particular, I'm not going to name names in part because I feel like I need to research a lot more about what this person has said.
Mm-hmm.
To really bag on them, but I saw at least one person who was just loathed that Apple dropped skeuomorphism for flat design, mm-hmm. and now it believes that this website design for WWDC does in fact indicate that Apple is reintroducing some kind of either skeuomorphic or 3D manifestation of UI elements, and so they were hate that Apple ditched skeuomorphism and are just furious that Apple is in their viewpoint re-embracing something other than flat design.
People are funny.
If you didn't want them to do, why wouldn't you be happy that they're changing it? If assuming you're just going along with the belief that that's what's going to happen.
I think there's a lot of people out there that just want to complain.
Well, that is assuredly true, right?
Yeah. And I think for some people, complaining about Apple has gone beyond they're upset about something to it's just a fetish.
Yeah. That's also true. But here's the reality. Apple changes how it does things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay for Apple, Apple leaving skeuomorphic design behind and embracing flat design doesn't actually mean that skeuomorphic design was somehow the wrong thing to do. It was the right thing to do for sure. And if Apple moves in a different direction, that doesn't mean that flat design was wrong. It just means that it's time to change things up again.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the mystery?
I do not see a mystery here. The way we interact with our devices changes over time, and the interface is changed to reflect that. It's simple as that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, just kind of interesting to see some of the kvetching out there.
Yeah. And I mean, some of these people saying that Apple is now, I'm not even going to bring that one up because it makes literally no sense to me whatsoever. So never mind. Yeah, I'm not getting it. I think we just have a bunch of cranky pants people out there.
Yeah, that seems about right. All right. Well, there you have it. WWDC. It's going to be very exciting. If you want to go, make sure you're registered for the lottery by the 22nd of March.
Yeah. So my guess is you need to be a paid registered Apple developer program member before that date.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm so looking forward to what happens at WWDC. And I'm so looking forward to how people retroactively apply their interpretations to this year's graphic.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Well, we're close out of time. Should we wrap up?
We should definitely wrap up. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank Jamf for sponsoring us.
Yes, Jamf.
Good stuff.
They rock. jamf.com/ACM. Go get your account set up. It's free.
Go get it set up. It's free. Good stuff.
Yes, it is.
I want to thank Spinetics for helping me be an overgrown boy.
Is that different from an undergrown man?
Yeah, probably.
I'm assuming so.
That seems like a metaphysical conversation for another time, though.
Yeah, that's going to be a great show when we do that one. Yeah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, shoot us a message at acm@macobserver.com. And I could have mentioned the Facebook group. Oh, well, anyhow, thanks for listening.
Facebook.com/group/Context Machine, that one?
That's the one.
Right. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Thank you.